Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Harper. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let's see. I live just outside Atlanta with my husband, two daughters, elementary school, and one who just started junior high, middle school, and two dogs, and we just got two guinea pigs.
Oh my gosh, are these pandemic pets? You know, like you're like, we're just gonna
We've had the dogs. My daughter's been wanting guinea pigs. She's in sixth grade now, ever since she was in second grade. So my younger is finally old enough now to help out with keeping, because, you know, they need a giant cage. You have to have two. You can't just get one. So they're old enough now to do most of the cleaning. So.
Oh, that's exciting.
And they are at home. They're doing virtual school still right now. So, you know, they do need something to do.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So when are you writing?
Yeah. I have to say my productivity is taking a hit this year for sure, because I used to write while they were at school.
Yeah.
9 to 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock was my prime time writing period. So that's really taking a hit. I just have to go, write when I can in my office and shut the door. And hopefully I can get a couple of hours a day. That's all I'm able to get in right now. But, you know, so far it's working. It's not helping productivity, but I'm able to meet most of my deadlines and get them out.
That sounds good. Yeah, I know. It's tough. It's a tough thing, I think, because you're juggling multiple responsibilities at the same time. You're expected to be productive. And you're like, we're going through really stressful times too, which is...
It's been tough for sure. I do have to give a shout out to my kids' teachers and their school system. I've heard some real horror stories about virtual learning, but they've been amazing. For the most part, I'm not doing that much more. You know, there is a little bit more that I have to do, keeping them on task and making sure they log into their classes on time. But overall, it's been going really great and really smoothly.
Oh, that's really good to hear. That's awesome. So what inspired you to become a writer?
You know, I've always loved reading and characters. And it was in seventh grade, I remember. I had the same English teacher for seventh and eighth grade. And in seventh grade, and especially in eighth grade, we started doing creative writing, which I'd never really done before in school. You know, in elementary, it's all about informational writing, nonfiction writing, writing for research. So this was my first time creative writing, and I really loved it. But she went the extra step, and we would have to, every Friday, I think it was, we would get in a circle on the floor and read our writing to each other. And then we would pass them around in class, and everybody would have to sort of comment on everybody else's writing. And that was the first time I was like, people really like my writing. I can actually touch people with my writing. I can, you know, make that emotional connection. So that's the first time it really hit me that maybe this is something I want to do. And then in high school, my best friend and I would write between, we hardly had any classes together. So we would pass our notebook back and forth between classes. We wrote several books that way. She would take a character and then I would just take a character, and it'd be a lot of dialogue. And it was just a fun way to sort of take that first step into novel writing. And after that, of course, I was hooked. I knew I wanted to do it. I just never had the time because college and jobs and, you know, Mm-hmm. About that.
So what was your journey to get that first book published?
Well, after I had my first daughter in 2009, I was staying home with her. And about a year later, it hit me. If I don't write now, when am I going to do it? Mm-hmm. Am I going to wait till I go back to work and then retire, which is fine, but I want to write a year. So I just started writing during nap times, and I wrote actually a young adult novel. The light of day at all. I paid an editor to sort of critique it for me, and it was like a creative writing class. I learned so much from doing that. And then by this time I'd had my second daughter. By the time she was a year old, about 2013, I was like, I'm gonna write romance because I've always wanted to write. That's what I love to read. It's my escape. So I wrote a historical. It was just a novella. It was like 15, 16, 17,000 words. And I happened to see Harlequin. I went to their submittable page, just got all of their lines, and they had a historical novella line at that time. They've since discontinued it. So I just submitted it to see what happens. And 2 weeks later, I heard back they wanted the full. So I sent it in, and then I got to revise and resubmit. And finally an offer to publish later that summer. And that was great. And I did another novella. And then by that time I was like, okay, I could do a full length now. And so thankfully my editor there was willing to work with me, and she wanted to see at that point what I had. So that's how it got started for me.
So talk about historical romance. Like, is there like a preference in terms of eras, ages you look for? Like, what's your research process looks like?
That's a good question. I read pretty widely. Of course, I started out reading all Regency, because when you think of historical romance, yeah, that's what you think of.
Yeah.
So I started with that. But I, so right now I primarily write in Viking and Victorian, which are two totally different time periods. I like them for different reasons. I love the Viking period because it's, we know a lot about it, but there's a lot that we don't know. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit like where history meets fantasy, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have as many rules because there's just a lot we don't know about that time period socially. So you could do a lot, and that's sort of where you can go to, where I go to play with my characters a little more. Plus, I really do like the strong alpha male characters that you tend to find in Vikings. I like Victorians because that time period, to me, it's very much the bridge from history to where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
Regency is very pastoral, very agricultural, a slower time. And then as the 19th century went on, you could see changes by the decade, almost like you can now. And so I really love how you can see the choices we make then, our social, everything falls into place to lay the groundwork for where we are now. And I just really love that period because you can pick, there's a lot of different things you can go research there, from the railroads, the social migrations that you see across the country here and in England,
mm-hmm.
Suffragettes, you know, it's really a great time in history for women. You start to see how they're progressing socially. You are see them working more. You do see them have more autonomy than they've had in other parts of history.
Yeah, and even this book touch upon Gilded Age New York. You it's a little bit, you get a little sense of, like, so you get a sense of America. So it's not just your typical, you know, Victorian just set in England. Like, there's also the Gilded Age of, you know, daughter princess coming to, you know, get married for a Duke to get social standing, not right. just in England, but also in New York, the 400. So
right. Right. Yeah, it was really interesting to read about, you know, we tend to think of Victorian as England for the most part, but there was a lot going on here. And it very much, I mean, we've been interrelated with England ever since our existence, obviously. Mm-hmm. So you can see a lot of crossover there. It was very interesting to see how, you know, you had these people who had been very wealthy for 2-3 generations, but they were still not accepted mm-hmm. in old New York society, just because they were not, you know, part of the original core group. Mm-hmm. So it was very interesting, all the stories out of there.
Yeah, it was interesting. I can see that, and I can see parallels now, like New Rich and Old Rich, you know, old school, like, you know, you see the parallels happening in today's society, so.
Yeah, you know, people, society can change, but people are the same, you know? Yeah. We have the same desires, the same fears that we've always had, and that's why I love historical fiction so much, because you can see that. You can see where we've been, how we've gotten to where we are now, and maybe things we need to work on to get to where we want to be in the future.
Yeah. So let's talk about your writing process. Do you follow that line, or do you see where the story leads? Yeah.
I wish I could follow an outline. I really do, because I see people do that and they seem to have everything together and they just put those books out there. I can't do that. What I can do and what I have to do is a little synopsis, and it'll be like 2 pages, single spaced, with a lot of gaps. But it does help me get my mind around the whole big idea of what I want my story to be. And I like, you know, you have to kind of figure out, or I have to figure out a little bit of my character's arc, the hero and heroine ahead of time. Where do I want them to start? Where do I want them to end up? Like, what big decision do they have to make? What are they trying to overcome in the book? And I tend to have social issue that I'm also discussing in the book. Mm-hmm. How do I want to weave that in? Which social issue am I taking on? Mm-hmm. So I have to get those. Those are things I have to kind of get fleshed out in my synopsis a little bit. But chapter by chapter, how that goes, I don't know. I tend to write the first 3, 4, 5 chapters. Once I'm 20,000 words in, then I have a much clearer idea of who these characters are, because I can put down what I want their decisions to be along the way, what I want their art to be, but until I'm writing them, I don't know their personalities that much. Mm-hmm. So I have to get about 20,000 words in. And then from there, I can say, okay, the next 2 or 3 chapters, I'm going to do this. And then I sort of write those, edit them. Then I do the next 2 or 3 chapters, write those, edit. And that's how I kind of get to the end. I still can't necessarily see the end until I'm about 80% of the way through.
And you have written some series. So do you plan those, like, knowing that these couples will get another book, or these side characters, or something just basically, you know, after reading, like, oh, this could be a good, you know, continuation?
I always know the first 2 books. Okay. After that, I'm not sure. So, you know, sometimes I get lucky. And in this series, the Gilded Age Heiresses series, I knew for sure I wanted it to be the 2 sisters and then their brother from New York. I was pretty confident who his heroine was going to be, but he's the 3rd book. Mm-hmm. And I just started writing it. So that could have definitely changed along the way. But I knew the first 2 couples for sure.
Yeah, it got hinted. And though I was like, I was reading and I was like, oh, I think she's getting a new book. And I was like, and then I look at the synopsis like, oh, yeah. It's a hero that I think it's going to get the new book, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of that happens in edits. Like, I'll turn it in and then my editor came back and was just like, let's pull this out just a little more. So that'll be my 2nd draft when I'm writing them together just a little bit more.
Yeah.
On the page. So
That's awesome. So what was the source of inspiration for the Harris Gets a Duke?
So I'd always heard about the American heiresses who sort of, I think there were like 300 in all who went to England and married into the aristocracy. And I knew it would be a really interesting story. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until my friend Lori was telling me, I guess she had toured some of the mansions in Newport, the Gilded Age mansions. And she took a tour there, and the tour guide was telling the story of Consuelo Vanderbilt. And she was born in the 1870s. She married into the aristocracy, the British aristocracy, in the 1890s. So this whole wave started in 1874. So she was a little later, but she had been born and bred to marry a duke. Her parents knew this is what they wanted her to do because they wanted to break into New York society. Mm-hmm. They had the money, they had the wealth, they just didn't have the pedigree, basically. So they, she was very secluded as a child, overly educated, really. She knew multiple languages. She was raised away from peers her age because she was very much cultivated to be this woman who was going to marry a duke. She even had this apparatus she had to wear. It strapped around her waist, went up her back, clipped under the chin, so, and she would wear it for hours every day to focus on her posture and to keep her neck straight. And you can see in her photos after she married, she's always got this really beautiful posture, swan-like neck. I mean, she was literally, her everyday life growing up was, you are going to be cultivated to marry a duke. And so, of course, she falls in love with a guy who's not a duke. He's not a gardener or anything. He's from a wealthy family in America, but he just was not socially acceptable to her parents. And so she had planned to run away and marry him. But her mother, I think she faked a heart attack. She threatened to have him killed, and there was this whole big to-do until finally Consuelo agrees to marry this duke. And from the, you can see newspapers from the time, they do the cartoons where she's being dragged to the altar with a ball and chain, and the duke's got money bags because he's being paid all this money to marry her. And, you know, eyewitness accounts say you could hear her crying as she walked down the aisle. And it was just such a powerful story to me, the humanism, what these women really went through, and how maybe not all of them were on board with their parents' thoughts that they should marry these strangers and live in a fort. And I mean, at that time, if you married your husband and he was English, you lose your marriage, you would lose your American citizenship. So it was really, you know, they were in a bad situation. So I really thought there was a lot to dig deep there and study the emotional impact of that on these women.
Yeah, we got it from the prologue. We got the first Dollar Princess, you know, the first taste of it. And now you just like go with it. And, you know, yeah, August's experience is a little different, but it's still like the whole Duke wanting, you know, for the money and the Dollar Princess, you know.
I had to give her a little more autonomy. It broke my heart to have her. So poor Camille has to be the one that has that terrible experience. But August, yes, I definitely also wanted to explore how, you know, a lot of women these days, in those days, were wanting more autonomy, wanting to take control of their life. You know, the suffragette movement had been around since the late 1840s. So you were seeing that more and more, and these women were called mannish. Mm-hmm. That you could see cartoons from the time again. There are these women, they're drawn with really masculine features. And it was very much, well, it's because they're old being like late 20s. And nobody wants to marry them anymore. So that's why they're this way. So it was important to me for August. She's in her early 20s. Mm-hmm. She's attractive. She's smart. She knows what she wants. She's bucking that stereotype. Mm-hmm. So it was very important. I really wanted a strong heroine character like that.
So what is your favorite trope to write?
I love enemies to lovers, which I think is probably why this book is a little bit enemies to lovers. Yeah. I love writing the back and forth banter between a strong hero and a strong heroine. And I love the aspect that you have these really two intelligent, strong people that just come at life from different viewpoints. Mm-hmm. And you have to bring them together through the progress of the book to sort of come to coalesce into some sort of agreement the book goes on, while still keeping their, you know, independence. And
yeah,
I think it works best when you can still see them as whole people at the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. I love the fact that it was like they had the instant attraction, and then they because they're competing reasons, they're like, they don't like each other, like they're attractive, but they're like, but there's a reason to like, I don't want to marry you, or you know, I feel like I have to marry you obligation. Mm-hmm. It's like, mm-hmm, push and pull the banter that happens. Yeah,
right. Yeah, and that's why it was important for me with Evan too, to I didn't want him to be a caricature, mm-hmm, of this greedy duke who just wanted money. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to explore how, well, he had a family to keep care of. He had all these tenants. There are legitimate reasons in his world at a time when, you know, marriages weren't necessarily like we see them today. They were business arrangements.
Yeah.
So in his world, this is a totally acceptable way, mm-hmm, to solve his problems. But, you know, again, they come at it from two different directions, and hopefully you get to see how they resolve their differences and find a way to go forward together.
I love this. So what can we expect for Violet's book?
Let's see. Well, that book is The Devil and the Heiress. It's already up for pre-order. It comes out July 6th. Mm-hmm. She's a little bit different than her sister August. And I really wanted to explore the different ways women could be seeking autonomy at this time when it was something not acceptable for women. August was the business-minded one, but Violet is a little more creative and artistic. She wants to be a writer. Mm-hmm. Of course, that wasn't necessarily accepted at the time either. Mm-hmm. So with her, you have her not wanting to marry into the aristocracy because she's afraid her creativity will be stifled, mm-hmm, as well as the fact that she doesn't want to marry someone she doesn't care about. And so her hero, Christian, is very much, he's a bit of a throwback to your typical rogue. Mm-hmm. You know, he runs a club. He's very jaded. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was interesting to bring those two together because Violet is a much more gentle, sunshiny person. Mm-hmm. And he's a bit darker character.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to read the next book.
Well, they basically, he helps her escape a marriage all the while hoping that she will marry him so he can have her for the same reasons that, you know, the Earl she was supposed to marry her.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
I love historical fiction and historical romance. I really love it when those two combine. Mm. And you have a historical fiction with a lot of historical detail with a really strong romance. I don't know if you've read E.B. Dunmore's League of Extraordinary Women, but, you know, Bringing Down the Duke is the first book in that, and it's a suffragette with a duke. So that's really good. I think it gets at exactly what I like. Right now, I'm reading A Holiday by Gaslight by Mimi Matthews. I don't know if you've read her books, but she's a really great Victorian author. What else? Piper Hewley, her Milford College series is set after Civil War here in Georgia. So her series is good. Anything by Jenny Fletcher, Victorian, Virginia Heath. She does Regency rom-coms.
Ooh.
So all of those are great.
Oh, this is awesome. What has been a book that you read this past year that you love?
I really, before the election and the news cycle, I just immersed myself in books for the 2 weeks before that because I did not want to pay attention to the news. I had 5 books to write and I needed to fuel my creativity. So one book I read that stood out for me was Mexican Gothic.
Mm-hmm.
What's that author's name? Silvia Moreno Garcia. Mm-hmm. I never read her before, but I really loved that book. It's set in 1950s Mexico, which I typically don't read past World War II era.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little hesitant to pick it up just because if it was 1950s, it's not really a decade I read about. But it's written in that amazing Gothic style that is really timeless. Like it could have been set at any point in history. Mm-hmm. The one thing I love about Gothic novels and this novel in particular is so atmospheric. It creates its own world, really. Mm. So it doesn't matter the time period. And I thought the 1950s time period actually worked well for this because the heroine was very glamorous. And so I really, really enjoyed it.
I love this. Tell us where I can find you online.
I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Goodreads, of course, all at Harper St. George.
Awesome.
I love Instagram the most. I think I'm hanging out there more and more. I love the pretty pictures.
Yeah. I love Instagram too. So thank you, Harper, for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate your invitation.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatreadnextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTORead10 to save. Visit whatreadnextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.